Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, this is Money Talking at Work. I'm Charlie Herman. If there's one thing Donald Trump seems to be most proud of, it's his ability to make deals, huge deals, and come out a winner.
I've been doing deals for a long time. I've been making lots of wonderful deals, great deals. That's what I do.
And on the campaign trail, this deal-making skill is one of the reasons he gives for why he would make a great president.
I think I will do a better job than anybody because I'm really a great negotiator. I know how to negotiate. I know how people are ripping us off. I know why they're ripping us off, and I know how to solve the problem.
But is negotiating a business deal the same as, say, negotiating an international peace treaty? What can we learn from Trump's deal-making style that could help us become better negotiators? Well, for answers, I turned to Deepak Malhotra. He teaches negotiations at the Harvard Business School, and he also advises businesses and governments that are dealing with high-stakes disputes. Now, negotiating peace deals is something that the president of the United States would be involved in, and we're in the middle of a presidential election, and you wrote or co-wrote a story for the Harvard Business Review that the headline alone just grabbed me, which was what Donald Trump doesn't understand about negotiation, and that would be...
You know, there is a difference between negotiating a business deal and negotiating an armed conflict or a peace deal. And the best way to sort of appreciate that is to just imagine the different visuals people have when they walk into these two different kinds of deals. When you're negotiating a business deal of the kind that I'm sure Mr. Trump has negotiated many, the image is that there's a bunch of money on the table and your job is to get in there and figure out how much money is there, try to increase the amount of money that's there, and then take as much of it as you can for yourself. That's sort of the negotiation that Mr. Trump is implying is going to take place across these many, many different contexts. We're going to get a better deal. We're going to win. We're going to beat them. Again, the image being there's a bunch of money on the table, and the entire goal is to figure out how we can get more of it. That's actually not how it works in most of the interesting and important conflicts and negotiations that a president has to deal with. In many of those situations, it's not like there's a pile of money on the table and there's lots of different ways you could do the deal and the question is how we can convince them to do it on our terms. In many of those conflicts and negotiations, there are not multiple solutions from which you're going to choose. If you're lucky, there might be one deal that everyone can live with. And even to achieve that one deal, there's going to be countless barriers standing in the way of getting to that deal. Political issues, potentially military issues, mistrust, timing, all sorts of constraints that you're dealing with. And your job is not to convince or threaten the other side into doing the deal on your terms. In most of these situations, the goal is to often, in collaboration with the other side, how are we going to knock down all the barriers that are standing in the way?
So is negotiation about winning or about compromising?
Well, negotiation should be about neither of those. Negotiation should be about achieving your objectives. And the idea of winning implies that someone's going to lose. And the idea of compromise means you're going to have to give something up. And at first cut, you shouldn't be thinking about either of those. You should think about what in this context allows us to achieve our objectives. If that means that they should be also allowed to win, well, then that's okay. If that means that the only way to get there is through some compromise, that's okay. But those are a means to an end. And the mistake is to conflate those with the actual objective that you have set for yourself.
So in your book, Negotiating the Impossible, you actually look at historical negotiations about the U.S. Constitution, about the Cuban Missile Crisis. Was there one particular negotiation that is your favorite in terms of the way that it played out and the lessons that it has for when a negotiation works?
I think the negotiations that took place during the Cuban Missile Crisis are the kinds of negotiations that I would hope every leader would study in business and those that are aspiring to be president of the United States or going into policy at any level. And the reason is, you know, it's harder to find a negotiation that had higher stakes than the Cuban Missile Crisis did. And you're sitting in a situation where there's a lot of mutual hostility, a lot of mistrust, a history of bad relations in many ways, and the conflict is escalating. You don't have very much information about what's happening. There's a lot of room for misunderstanding and miscalculation. And despite all of that, and despite a lot of pressure to go in much more aggressively with a strictly military approach to solving the problem, I think what the president did, with the help of some important advisors, notably his brother, Bobby Kennedy, what President Kennedy did was chart a much more nuanced path.
We know the answer from history, but in that moment, how is it figured out?
Well, in a nutshell, and a nutshell can never do history justice, but to put it simply, if the assumption is that the Soviet Union at the time is behaving in this way by putting missiles capable of delivering nuclear weapons to the United States, if the reason they're doing this is because they're crazy or because they're evil or because they're out to get us, if that is our understanding of the situation, then it limits our options. It means the only way we can respond is to be very, very aggressive and somehow fight back on these issues. But it turns out that when you take the Soviet perspective at the time, you learn a lot of things that give you some ideas about what their motivation is and in turn what the solution might be. At the very time that they were putting these missiles in, the U.S. had missiles in Turkey and Italy that may have been as threatening to the Soviet Union as these missiles were going to be to us. At the same time, there was also a great missile gap, which basically refers to the idea that whether you measure missiles or bombers or nuclear weapons, the U.S. had about 10 times as many, an order of magnitude more of each of these than the Soviet Union did, and we had better technology. And for the Soviet Union, this was a big problem, albeit a short, if something went wrong, from their perspective, they were going to be at a disadvantage. Now, if you are willing to take this perspective into account, if you're willing to say to yourself, I may not agree with them, I may think what they're doing is abhorrent, but I am willing to understand why they think it's appropriate, then it opens up more options for you. And one of the points I make in the book, Negotiating the Impossible, and this is one of the stories that I used to make this point, is that the idea that empathy is something you do when you're nice or empathy is doing somebody a favor is a mistaken notion. The more you empathize, the more options you create for yourself. You're not doing others a favor, you're doing yourself a favor. And this perspective is what helped President Kennedy chart a path to a solution.
We seem to be in a climate right now of toughness, and empathy doesn't really fit into that. Is that something that troubles you when you see people like Donald Trump saying, I'm just going to be tough?
It troubles me when somebody says, that's all I'm going to be. I'm not someone who's going to suggest that there's no room for toughness. Sometimes you need to be aggressive just to get the other side to the table. Sometimes you need to be aggressive to make sure they don't push you around. So there's a room for that. But it is very, very easy, especially when things get heated, when conflicts start escalating, for that toughness to crowd out everything else and for it to become a very one-dimensional strategy.
So in the end, what makes a good negotiator?
If you could have only one mindset going into a negotiation, if you could pick only one, I would strongly suggest, no matter what the negotiation is, to walk in with a learning mindset. You are there as a negotiator above all to understand as well as possible the interests and the alternatives and the perspective of all the parties that are relevant to the negotiation. And negotiators who fail to do that will get systematically worse outcomes than those who put a lot of effort into understanding before they walk in, when they're at the table, and when they walk away. So that's one really, really important element of negotiation. Flexibility is important. Now, flexibility doesn't always mean compromise, but it does often mean a willingness to do the deal in different ways. I'm a big fan of telling people in a negotiation, I know where I need to get. I'm flexible on how we get there. And a third thing I'd mention is there's often too much of an emphasis on the substance of the deal, what it is that's going to go in the contract or in the agreement, the terms. What people don't pay enough attention to is the process. How are we going to get from here to the finish line?
So what should you not do when it comes to negotiations?
If we're thinking about in the context of a business negotiation, or if we're thinking in the context of how a president's going to negotiate the kinds of deals they do, I think one of the mistakes people end up making is they put the other side in a corner, and they force people to choose between doing what's actually smart and doing what helps them save face. And one of the things you always want to do in negotiations, it's an old principle, and it doesn't matter whether you're negotiating a business deal or a world conflict, you want to get into the habit of writing their victory speech for them. That's a phrase that Bill Ury, a negotiation theorist, came up with many years ago, and I think it's a fantastic notion, the idea of writing their victory speech for them. And if you want to put it simply, it's, think about what it is that you're asking someone to say yes to and ask yourself, how will they say yes to this and still be able to go back and declare victory to their own constituents, to their voters, to their board or their boss or their partners? And if you can't think of any way for them to be able to do that, you may have just created a barrier to achieving your objectives.
It's funny. I just keep thinking that in the case of Donald Trump, there's just such a significant difference between negotiating a real estate deal and negotiating with Iran to free a reporter, or negotiating with Pakistan to allow drones to fly in part of your country. It's just they feel so incredibly different, and yet there seems to be a sense of a negotiation is a negotiation is a negotiation.
Well, the level at which a negotiation is that basically from my point of view, and I work with businesses, I work with governments, I work with doctors who are trying to have more effective conversations with their patients, You know, I can tell you, at least from my experience, negotiation isn't fundamentally about dollars and cents. It's not about lives lost or lives saved. It's not about emotions. It's not about a ceasefire. Negotiation fundamentally, no matter what domain you're in, negotiation is always fundamentally about human interaction. And the question we're always trying to answer is the same. How do we engage with other human beings in such a way as to achieve better understandings and better agreements? The problem is when somebody comes from a set of experiences where there's only one dimension over which you're negotiating, the rules of the game are usually pretty static, you're basically haggling. If that's the only set of negotiations that you've mastered and you find yourself in a situation where the rules of the game are changing, where history matters, where it's not just about dollars and cents, but there are other issues at stake, everything from saving face to national security to pride to winning elections, the more you complicate the situation, somebody who's walked in mastering a simple game isn't necessarily going to be able to play the other game more effectively. You know, sometimes people make the metaphor of, you know, you may be good at checkers, but that doesn't mean you're going to play chess well. This is an even bigger issue because, you know, both chess and checkers at least have one thing in common. They're both zero-sum games. Well, the world that the next president's going to be walking into is not a zero-sum game. It's not the fact that if we can beat them, that means we won. If they do poorly, that means we gain. But think broadly and historically about all of the times that we have solved problems through diplomacy and negotiations and not just think one-dimensionally about it.
Deepak, thank you very much.
Thank you, Charlie.
Clearly, negotiations are complicated and stressful. I've realized that in the workplace, I often have to give up what I want or how I go about achieving something if it serves the bigger goal of what we're trying to do. Compromise, it's not always a bad word. As always, thanks for listening. If there's an issue that you're facing at work that you'd like some help resolving, I'd love to hear from you. Send an email to us at moneytalking@wnyc.org. And of course, you can also find us on social media, our favorite being Twitter. Our handle is @moneytalking, or you can send a note directly to me. You can find me @CharlieHerman. And if I can negotiate just one more thing from you, if you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, if you check us out there, please give us a review. It really helps get the word out. Money Talking is a production of WNYC Studios. Our team includes Bill Moss and Rebecca Ibarra. And someone I genuinely look forward to negotiating with on a regular basis, Amy Poftak at the Harvard Business Review. I'm Charlie Herman. Thanks so much for listening.